I believe it's time to get started this cloudy morning. Just never know what kind of weather we're going to have, do we? Is it supposed to rain? I haven't heard the forecast. Is it, it's foggy this morning, but is it rainy? It's supposed to be rainy. We had damage in Dallas this week again. A lot of hail up there. Hailstorm just really, really tore a lot of things up. So, okay, if you're visiting with us this morning, we are happy to have you. And we welcome you. Any opportunity you have to come to West Park, we'd like for you to come. We have John visiting with us this morning. You want to lead us in prayer? You kind of our visiting prayer leader whenever you show up. If you would, we'd love for you to open us with prayer. Amen. Thank you very much. It is a special weekend as far as the emphasis of the empty tomb. Empty tomb. We are so thankful for that each and every Lord's Day and every day. We've been looking at the Hebrew letter here, the epistle that the unknown writer, the Hebrew writer, writes. We've been listening, learning, and comparing, just as the Hebrew writer wants his audience to compare the law of Moses to the establishment of the new covenant through Jesus Christ, the church. Jesus is our high priest, and all the comparisons he's going to make. And we've been looking at that and listening to him and talking about it. Today we're going to continue that in chapter 5. Hebrew writer says, every high priest is selected from among men. High priest. We talked about the Old Testament high priest. Remembering back to your Old Testament studies. You say, what did the high priest do? And we've discussed that to a degree. But the Hebrew writer tells you in this verse what he did. He said he was appointed to represent them who? Men, people, to represent them in matters related to God. It's one thing. To offer gifts. It's another thing. And to offer sacrifices for sins. So there in a nutshell is a summation or a summary of the job description of a high priest. Now, he did a lot of other things. There's a lot of ceremonial things that he would do. There were decisions that he would make, judgment calls that he would render. And so he was a pretty busy fellow, high priest was. But the Hebrew writer right here says, for this passage and for discussion this morning, here's what he did. First of all, he was a man. He wasn't divine. Wasn't an angel. Wasn't God. He was man. He was selected from among men. And he was appointed. Why? Represent them. Represent them in matters relating to God. And I know everything we do, we can make the case for, and we could preach the sermon that everything we do is a matter relating to God, and it is. But the Hebrew writer here is talking about a conduit to God, a mediator with God, someone who will represent man, woman, to God. And said that's what the high priest, that's what his job was. The high priest was able to go places that nobody else could go. He would go into the tabernacle setting there, what they call the Holy of the Holiest, the Holy of the Holies place. What was that? It was the inside, the inner sanctum, that only the high priest could go in. He couldn't go in all the time. When would he go? There were appointed times that he would go in. There was an appointed time for him to go in and to offer sacrifices for men. I had a lady ask me one time, just worried her to death. She really liked things to be clean. She was a cleanophobic, I guess would might be the term. And she worried about who took care of the holy, who dusted it so it would be clean when he would go in there. She said, you know, if he only went in once a year, had to be dirty, had to be dusty. Whose job was it? Who took care of that? And I thought she was kidding, but she wasn't kidding. I just finally said, well, you know, I guess maybe the Lord dusted it. I don't know, but they didn't have maid service, evidently, because he was the only one who could go in. So he could go places nobody else could go, and he was supposed to go and do that on matters relating to God. Offering gifts, sacrifices, two categories that the Hebrew writer uses here. What's the difference in a gift and a sacrifice? Any thoughts? Quite honestly, if you look throughout the whole Bible, particularly the Old Testament, the words that are used here can be interchangeable, really can mean the same thing, and can also have other meanings and other contexts. You have to kind of look at the context to know what they are. In this context, though the words sometimes are interchangeable, it would appear, at least, that the Hebrew writer might be making a distinction between an offer, a gift, an offering that you would bring, and an actual atoning sacrifice that would be made. One would be a goodwill gesture, a goodwill offering to God. The other would be the animal, the blood sacrifice. Maybe that's what he's saying. Don't really know. But he seems to make a distinction here between your gifts, which might be a voluntary thing, perhaps, and the sacrifices, which was a commanded thing. Any other thoughts on that? I don't know if that helps or hurts, but that's really kind of where I'd leave that this morning without getting too deep into word studies here. But he also says he was appointed from men. We're going to talk a little bit more before it gets through here about these were only certain men. Only some could be considered for it. If you want to go ahead and jump ahead, who's going to be able to be considered for this position? The high priest position. Okay, the Levites. House of Aaron, the Levites. Okay, and we're going to talk about that. He's able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness. This is why he has to offer sacrifices for his own sins as well as the sins of the people. It would appear that there's a couple of qualifications for a high priest. One of them would be that he comes from the right bloodline, the right tribe. Another one would be that he can relate to the people, that he has a compassionate heart. Otherwise, I don't think the Hebrew writer would make the point here that he can not just deal with the people. How do you say he can deal with them? Gently. There's a compassion here. There's an understanding here. One of the reasons he can be gentle with them is because he himself is a sinner. He's not perfect himself. He makes mistakes too. So a man who also makes mistakes ought to be compassionate for others who make mistakes. And I say ought to be. It's not always that way. But it's kind of interesting to me that when we get over into the New Testament, which we're in here, obviously, at this point, but we look at the qualifications and the qualities of leaders for the Lord's church. One of them is that they be compassionate. They be gentle. They not be harsh. They not be people that are easily angered. But those who can be compassionate, those who can be patient, those who can be long-suffering. Same qualities going back here to the Old Testament to a degree. Someone who can be gentle. Deal gently with those, particularly those who are ignorant. Who was it that was ignorant? Sorry? The Jews, but his audience here probably is all Jews. What's the difference in an ignorant Jew and a non-ignorant Jew? Ignorant because they don't know the law. Okay? And perhaps ignorant because they don't understand the law, though they may know the facts, or they may not understand it whenever they sin. If you got your Old Testament with you, go back to Numbers chapter, 15. Let me look here just a second. Yes, chapter 15. Numbers chapter 15, beginning with verse 22. In the provisions of the law, there is a distinction between the unintentional sins and what we would refer to in a court of law today as the premeditated. The word slipped my mind there for a minute, but the premeditated sins. You know, if you go to court today, from a criminal standpoint and civil also, but there's a distinction, there's different penalties for things that are premeditated. You hear them talk about premeditated murder and accidental manslaughter. Now the result's the same, fella's dead. But there's different penalties, and courts look at it differently. If it was premeditated or whether it was unintentional. Same thing was there in the law of Moses, if you go back and look at it. Verse 22 says, if you unintentionally fail to keep any of the commands that the Lord gave Moses, any of the Lord's commands to you through him from the day the Lord gave them and continuing through the generations to come. So that's for everybody there. And if this is done unintentionally without the community being aware of it, then the whole community is to offer a young bull and a burnt offering as an aroma pleasing to the Lord, along with its prescribed grain offering and drink offering and a male goat for a sin offering. See, there's a remedy there. There's a remedy there, the offerings that the high priest is going to be involved with. Verse 25, the priest is to make atonement for the whole Israelite community, and they'll be forgiven. For it was not intentional, and they have brought to the Lord for their wrong an offering made by fire and a sin offering. See the high priest? He is himself a sinner, and because of that, he's dealing gently with those who were ignorant. Verse 27. If just one person sins unintentionally, there's still a remedy. He must bring a year-old female goat for a sin offering. The priest, here he is to make atonement before the Lord for the one who erred by sinning unintentionally. And when atonement has been made for him, he'll be forgiven. One and the same law applies to everyone who sins unintentionally, whether he's a native-born Israelite or an alien. But, verse 30, anyone who sins defiantly, that's not unintentional. That's premeditated. He knows what he's doing. Whether he's a native born or an alien, he blasphemes the Lord, and that person must be cut off from the people because he has despised the Lord's word and broken his commands. That person must surely be cut off. His guilt remains on him. And you keep reading. And you get down a little bit further in verse 35, says, then the Lord said to Moses, the man must die. The whole assembly must stone him outside of the camp. Ignorant, premeditated, unintentional, defiant. The Old Testament law said there was a difference. And there was a difference in the nature of the sin. There was a difference in the situation surrounding it. And there was a difference in the punishment or the remedy. One of them, you made offerings to God. You went through the process that he talked about, and he said there's forgiveness. The other one is you blaspheme God and you need to be taken outside the city gate and put to death. And the whole community had to participate. Everybody had to pick up a rock and throw it at the person. You know, those were tough times. It's one thing to sit on a jury and make a decision of punishment of somebody, and even a capital case that a person's to be put to death, and to be somebody that had to pick up the rock and throw it. Most of us don't want to do that. Now, I had a lawyer tell me, he was a fellow elder I served with for many years, and he told me one time about being at the courthouse. It wasn't his case, but he was sitting there getting ready to go before the judge on another case. And they were going through the voir dire situation trying to pick a jury. And it was a capital case. Could have a death by electric chair back at that time in Huntsville. That could be the penalty. And he said that, you talk about a tough juror, said the attorney was going through in the questions and what they call the voir dire there trying to decide who they're going to pick. And if you've ever been for jury duty, you realize you're not selected for a jury. You just hadn't been culled out. It's the culls that are left. You know, they all get to X people out and don't want him, don't want her, and then whoever's left, that becomes your jury. But he was asking this one man and said, do you realize now, are you aware that the penalty for this crime could be death by the electric chair? The old man said, yes. And the follow-up question was, are you ready? If that happens, can you carry through with that? Thinking about, you have the guts to make that decision. Well, he said, when they asked him, said, can you carry through on that? He said, the old man said, they do that down at Huntsville, don't they? He said, yeah. He said, well, I guess I could if they'd do it on a Saturday. Which he said, I knew then that was one tough fella right there now. If they can arrange it for a Saturday, I guess I can go down there and turn the switch on. Can you carry through with it? He said, I can if they can arrange to do it on Saturday. Well, that's what you did in the community in the Old Testament law. If a person had committed the intentional, premeditated crime, it was punishable not only by death, but you took him outside the city gates and the whole community, everybody picked up a rock and they stoned him. That's a totally different dimension when you think about it. But anyway, back to Hebrews chapter 5. The Hebrew writer is saying that the high priest, as he goes through and he carries out his job description, his duties, he deals gently with those who are ignorant, particularly those who are going astray. And he can do it gently and he can understand who these people are and why they may have fallen, because said he's subject to weakness himself. That's why he has to offer sacrifices not only for other people but for his own sins as well as for the sins of the people. Y'all with me? Ready to move slides? No one, verse 4, takes this honor upon himself. You don't just get up one morning in the Old Testament time period, under the old dispensation, you don't just get up one day and say, I believe I'll be high priest. I've been thinking about it, and I just think I'd be good at it. And so I'm going to take on that role. I'm going to hang up the shingle, hang up the sign in my front window that says high priest. I like being a notary public. Notary, they used to see the signs around. Notary public here. High priest. He said, no. Nobody takes this honor upon himself. He's got to be called by God. In the like manner, in the same fashion that Aaron was. So here we go. You have to be from Aaron's household. You have to be a Levite. He says, since we know that, remember, though I took you back to Numbers a while ago, we're reading out of Hebrews this morning. So the Hebrew writer is telling those who are faithful followers of Jesus. He's talking to the saved, the redeemed, the elect, the church. And he's saying, Christ was the same way. Though he is our high priest, he didn't take this upon himself. He didn't appoint himself, but he took this upon himself as the glory of the becoming a high priest. God's the one that said, you are my son. Today I have become your father. You are my son. Now, I know we can get all involved here and going back to the beginning. We can talk about Jesus as John does in John chapter 1 as he opens up his gospel. That in the beginning was the Word was Jesus, the Word was there, and nothing was done separate and apart from him. He was a part of everything. And we can talk about the oneness of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We can go back into Genesis, a creation story, when they looked down from heaven, said, let us make man in our image. Plurality there, that's what John, in my opinion, is dealing with in John chapter 1. We can talk about all that, and that Jesus was always there. We can listen as John describes to us how Jesus left heaven to come to earth to dwell with men. And that's what I believe the Hebrew writer is talking about here. This is a John 3:16 moment. That God so loved Jesus, his only begotten Son. Only begotten Son. No one else has ever come into this world as a human, drawing breath, fleshly person. No one's ever done that to where they were God in the flesh other than Jesus Christ. That's John 3:16. And so, Hebrew writer saying that's how Jesus was selected. He didn't just appoint himself. But God said to him, you're my son, the day I become your father. Then he says in verse 6, and we've talked about this. This is several times this has happened as we go through here. The Hebrew writer seems very comfortable with this crowd, that they're knowledgeable of Scripture, and he's obviously knowledgeable of Scripture, but he doesn't see the absolute necessity to always give you a chapter and a verse. He said, it's been said somewhere, another place. You're a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Now, this being said elsewhere, if you'll search it out, you're going to find that the psalmist said that in Psalm 110, verse 4. And that's obviously what the Hebrew writer is quoting here, but he just says, said in another place that Jesus is a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. And we're going to talk more about Melchizedek when we get to chapter 7. Because the Hebrew writer talks more about Melchizedek in chapter 7. So, for time's sake this morning, and so we don't rob ourselves of discussion when we get to chapter 7. We're going to save the bulk of that discourse for then. But we will say this isn't the first time in the letter that Hebrew writer has introduced, suggested that the priesthood of Jesus is in the same fashion or after the order, in the order of Melchizedek. Do you remember who Melchizedek was? Again, we're going to get into this more specifically in chapter 7. But does anybody remember Melchizedek? King of Salem, back when we were studying on Sunday nights the life of Abraham. Remember, Abraham comes in contact with Melchizedek, the great king of Salem. Salem, same spot as Jerusalem, we read about in the New Testament. And he was a king, and he was a good king. And it was a good relationship between Abraham and Melchizedek. But that's who Melchizedek is, and the Hebrew writer is going to draw some pretty strong comparisons between Jesus' priesthood and Melchizedek's priesthood, because he's referred to in the Old Testament as a priest. One of the things that will obviously be talking point, it's going to be talked about, is he didn't come from the tribe of Levi. He wasn't from the house of Aaron. So what's already been said here in verse 4 about no one takes his honor upon himself, and Melchizedek didn't either, but he's not from the right tribe. And so, in fact, we're ahead of tribes here at this point, when we learn of Melchizedek back as the king of Salem. So this is going to be something that the Hebrew writer is going to want to talk about more in just a couple of chapters. But he's making that point again. Jesus has some similarities in the same order of as that of Melchizedek. Anybody want to say anything else on that at this point? Sorry? Yeah, he not only was a priest, but he was also king. And we know that's true of Jesus. Jesus is going to be king. Very good. Again, we'll go into a little more detail as the Hebrew writer does in chapter 7. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, Hebrew writers writing this after Jesus' earthly ministry. After he has walked and talked and preached and healed and fed multitudes. After he's been through the trials. After he's taken out on the hill and crucified. After he's raised up and walked out of the tomb. After he's ascended to heaven. Hebrew writers writing this letter. So he's looking back to those times and says, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with loud cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. What do you think the context of this is? What do you think he's referring to? Sorry? The Garden of Gethsemane. The night Jesus prayed in the garden, went to the garden knowing he was going to be arrested in just a little bit, knowing what he was going to face, took his disciples with him, set them down at the gate of the garden, asked three of them, Peter, James, and John, go with me a little further into the garden. And they did. And then he told them to sit here and watch. Watch and pray with me. And he went further ends where it was a private moment between him and God. And by the way, how good a job did they do watching and praying? Went to sleep, didn't they? Hurt Jesus. We talk about, did he have emotions? Did he understand? As a Hebrew writer says, he suffered all things as we suffer. He was hurt by that. He came out, and remember what he asked them? These are his closest companions. Could you not watch with me 1 hour? This is an important night, y'all. We're fixing to go. I'm fixing to face something like no one's ever faced before. Could you not just stay awake and pray with me? Watch with me for an hour. You see, he was very disappointed. But as he goes on into the garden and he offers his prayer to God, and we have an account of it, that's what, in my opinion, is the real Lord's Prayer. A lot of times we'll hear somebody mention the Lord's Prayer, cite the Lord's Prayer. What they're referring to is the model prayer. Remember when the disciples came to Jesus and said, "Teach us to pray. Show us how to pray." He said, "Well, here's you a model prayer. Here's you model prayer. We call it the Lord's Prayer." No, that wasn't his prayer. That was a teaching prayer. His prayer was in the garden. That was him praying. And in that prayer, one of the things he said, finally came the point, he said, "Father, let this cup pass from me. It's bitter. I don't want to drink it." What's he referring to? The cross. Crucifixion. Death. Suffering. The flogging. The beating. The humiliation. People spitting on him. People making fun. "Let this cup pass from me. I don't want to drink it. I don't want to do it." He didn't want to go to the cross. But he said, "Nevertheless, thy will, not my will, be done." If this is what needs to happen, if this is what has to happen, if this is what my role is and why I'm here, is to bear the sins of the world on the tree, on the cross, I'm going to do it. Give me the strength to do it. But it's not what I prefer doing. That's what the Hebrew writer, I believe, is referring to here. When he says, during the days of Jesus' life, he offered up prayers, petitions with loud cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. God could have saved him. Could have saved him. But it was necessary. Was absolutely necessary. It said he was heard because of his reverent submission. Although he was a son, he learned obedience from what he suffered. If Jesus couldn't always get his prayers answered the way he preferred things to happen, we're not going to either. And it's a bit unreasonable for us to expect that. If the Apostle Paul tells us that I had this thorn in the flesh, whatever it was, but he said, "I prayed three times, Lord, remove this." And he said, each time the answer came back, "No, no, no." But the third time the answer was, "No, but my grace is sufficient for you. I'm going to give you the strength to get through it." If Jesus that night in the garden, and if the Apostle Paul on his prayer for his thorn, if neither one of them could always get their prayers answered in the way they wanted them answered, don't you agree it's a bit unreasonable for us to think we're going to always get ours answered the way we want it? Now, we'll get it answered the way it needs to happen. As Paul will say, all things work together for the good of those that love the Lord. God's will is going to be done. His purpose is going to be accomplished. And we'll be given the strength to get through it. But it's going to be God's way, not our way. That's what the Hebrew writer, I think, is saying here. That even though Jesus, the one Son, the only one God ever made that statement of, he learned strength, he gained strength because of his reverent submission. Last part of chapter, verse 7. Although he was a son and learned obedience from what he suffered and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. Jesus was made perfect through his submission to God, his obedience to God. He didn't sin. This being made perfect is not a cleansing of his sins. He didn't sin. He didn't have sin. He was made perfect because he submitted to the will of God. You with me? And the Hebrew writer says, because of that, he was the originator of salvation. We talk a lot about salvation. Won't be saved. Are you saved? How can we be saved? Were they really saved? Salvation, this whole big package of salvation, Jesus was the originator of it. He's the one that authored it. He's the architect of it. And the Hebrew writer says that's where it all started. And it is available for who? For everybody who will obey. Once again, the Hebrew writer is making the point here. It takes more than just believing. It takes more than he's, if you remember in the illustrations that we've already had as we go through the Hebrew writer's record here, he talks about those that were led out of Egypt on their way to the promised land, the rebellious generation. He said they suffered and they died. They were punished for two reasons. They didn't believe. They didn't obey. They didn't believe and they didn't obey. When the Hebrew writer talks to us here about salvation, eternal salvation, it's heaven. Eternal salvation. He says it's available for all who obey. It's not just everybody believes and everybody realizes heaven exists and everybody who wants heaven. It's for all who obey him. And then he says once again, he was designated by God to be the high priest in the order of Melchizedek. He didn't appoint himself. Same way none of the Levitical priests appointed themselves. He was appointed by God, designated by God, to be the high priest, as Sherry's already pointed out, after the order of Melchizedek. One of the things is going to be Melchizedek was not only a priest, but a king. Another one's going to be he didn't come from the Levitical tribe. Jesus doesn't either. Where's Jesus come from? How's his blood flow through the 12 tribes of Israel? You remember? Got to get him through David. Go back. Where's that going to come from? When it goes back to Boaz. Y'all go look that up. There's your homework assignment. I'm not going to tell you. There's your homework assignment, but it's not going to be through Levi. Okay? All right, comments. Leave you something you can go find out. Any questions? Thoughts? Y'all wanting to get out early or what? I thought maybe there'd be some conversation here on this. Yeah. Provoke not your children under wrath. But that was, we'll go back into the old law in the Hebrew days. You know, one of the commandments was, honor thy father and thy mother, and it would go on and say, and your days will be long upon the earth. And I didn't really understand exactly what that meant for a long time till I was reading along and I found the punishment for those who dishonored and disobeyed parents. And you know what it was? They were stoned to death. So then it made a whole lot more sense. Your days will be long on the earth. Because if you disobeyed, you didn't honor, they took you out. You were gone. They stoned you. They killed you. So obviously, if you wanted to live long on the earth, you better honor father and mother. Good point. All right, well, I'm going to give you back 5 minutes where y'all can visit with one another and catch up with each other, and we'll be assembled again here at 10 o'clock. Thank you.